From the KLYT broadcast studio, this is ABQ Connect. Your input on today's topic is important to us. Join in the conversation by calling 505-338-5790 or text 505-585-LIVE. ABQ Connect.
Hello, this is Jim Williams with you on ABQ Connect. Appreciate you joining us today. Of course, Steve Ryman will be back with you Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday this week. The topic for today is one of those kind of tough topics, minor domestic sex trafficking. Our friend Shelley Rep is in studio. Hi, Shelley.
Hey, Jim. It's good to see you.
You know, I never have gotten over minor domestic sex trafficking as a term. And I've said this to you maybe 10 out of the 50 times we've been on the air. I just didn't ever think that was something in Albuquerque, but it is very prevalent.
Well, it is. There's, you know, some misinformation about human trafficking in general. And so a lot of times people think that human trafficking is really about immigrants, which it is. We see a lot of trafficking that happens with the immigrant population. But what gets missed is that there is this whole nationwide epidemic, essentially, of that domestic minor sex trafficking thing that's been happening with young people for years and years and years, and it's only been maybe the last 10 years that it's been recognized at all.
How did this come to your attention?
So I had, I had worked at a church. So I was an outreach director at a church here in Albuquerque and was doing outreach in the community. And we had set up a situation with a local high school where our college students would tutor these seniors that were coming in. And so I was overseeing that. And one of the college tutors came to me and said, "Hey, you need to talk to the girl I'm working with. There's something going on." And, you know, I'd worked in ministry for a long time. And so I thought I knew all of the normal but terrible things. And so I was just floored when a young girl came in and started talking about how her family had kind of given her an ultimatum. She had to either leave the house or she had to perform.
So, Shelley, she was being trafficked for sex by her own family?
By her own family. In fact, that is one of the more common ways that we see this this type of sex trafficking, is that it's actually through families, and which is surprising. You think, how could a family do that? But what we've seen is that there are kind of a bunch of people in our world who this is the history of who their family is, where there's grandfathers who traffic their own children and then their grandchildren. And then, you know, aunts and uncles who traffic folks. In fact, every now and then on the news, you'll see like a large scale human trafficking, like operation where there's a bunch of kids rescued. So it'll be like 30 traffickers and 120 kids, you know, rescued in California or something. It's all over the United States. And almost always when you see those large scale events, they're almost always familial trafficking because these families keep the kids off the radar. They're generally homeschooled, not always, but generally homeschooled. And so they're kind of out of sight, out of mind, but these families end up doing that. In fact, the oldest client that we had came into services with us at 36 years old. She had been trafficked by her father since she was 9 years old. And the way that she escaped was they kind of got in the fight and she was being kept in a hotel room and he left her there in the hotel room. He took her shoes so that she couldn't leave, but she decided she was going to leave anyways. And she just walked herself to an emergency room and said, "I need some help." And that's how she was identified. So it's,
and this is illegal.
It's absolutely illegal. So here's the deal. It is illegal for somebody under the age of 18 to consent to commercial sex. And we say that because there's the age of consent, like when you talk about teenagers who get involved in sexual activity and that they have consent. Well, it's different when you're talking about commercial sex, which is transactional. So it is getting money or goods or services for performing that sex act. And so it is illegal under the age of 18 for somebody to consent to that.
We're with Shelley Rep. She is the director of the New Mexico Dream Center. This is a tough subject, minor domestic sex trafficking. And as we started the show, I mentioned that because there may be sensitive ears that don't quite understand this.
This is a good one to kind of maybe listen on the podcast if you need to later when little kids aren't around.
Yeah. But Shelley, I will also say that the reason I love to have you on is you are very clear about all of this. I mean, you're giving us some definitions now that have to do with your work with the Sheriff's Department and with the Attorney General's office, because there are people in our government that are doing really good things about this, but the New Mexico Dream Center is stepping in to do some other things. We're going to talk about those services in just a second.
Sure.
But I want to really emphasize the problem. On any given Friday night in Albuquerque, how many children would you estimate are victims of sex trafficking?
So in looking at what we see in Albuquerque, we would estimate that anywhere from 1,000 to 3,000 kids on the street any given night, well, specifically over the weekend. So if we look at like Friday nights and Saturday nights, when you look at the trend of people who are looking at purchasing sex, they start, this comes out of a Seattle study, but they start looking to set up what, you know, air quotes would be like a date. They start looking on Thursdays. And so Thursdays, they're looking to see if they're going to purchase sex. And so that's where you see kind of a lot of the traffic happening.
Pretty much all done online now?
All online, almost all. There are some, you know, drive-up encounters. It is much rarer now, and it's especially rare when you're talking about children because they are protected. So if you've got somebody who's trying to set up a date with somebody who's underage, they're gonna try to do that in a more nefarious way. So hiding behind the internet is one of the ways that they can do that.
The New Mexico Dream Center is a Christian organization. NMDreamCenter.org is the website. So as we're talking today with Shelley Rep, you might want to just think about, you know, following along on the website.
Absolutely.
There's all kinds of different services that Shelley and her team are providing. Shelley, I'm shocked about the number of kids. There wouldn't be that many if there weren't customers.
100%.
Like, where are these? Who are these customers?
Right. And, you know, and here's the deal. The customers are people who are living in our community who feel okay about purchasing children for sex.
Do they look different than us? Are they different?
No. Jim, they come from every socioeconomic background that you could imagine. Like, so we have seen business owners who are looking to buy sex. We have seen people in the faith community who are looking to buy sex. So there's not any specific segment within that. When you look at the socioeconomics around it, it is people who are willing to expend disposable income on purchasing sex. So that means we have to look back and think about, well, what does that mean for demand? How was that demand created?
Why do you think the demand is so high?
So I think it ties directly to pornography. Like, we have seen with the growth of the internet that how people can access pornography has absolutely changed. And the amount, the age that you can access pornography, the amount of pornography, and the types of pornography that you can access is so prolific that you have it at your fingertips. And so it is almost like this appetizer that happens, and you want to live out then the fulfillment of it. So what we would say is that pornography is one of the biggest indicators to somebody purchasing sex and one of the biggest contributors to there being a market for the purchase of sex.
Why are sex traffickers hard to find, arrest, and prosecute successfully?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of factors that go into that. So one of the things we have to look at is that anybody who's in a sex trafficking ring or sex trafficking relationship, that trafficker ultimately has control over that person. So those victims are not likely to testify for them. In fact, more often than not, it is the victim that gets arrested, not the trafficker. And so because of that,
they would be arrested because somebody thinks they're a prostitute.
Exactly. Hmm. Exactly. So we have in New Mexico what's called a safe harbor law, which is you cannot arrest or charge a minor with prostitution. So that can't happen. However, that's not the case for somebody who is over 18. And so when a trafficker develops that relationship and has control over someone, that person that's perceived as a prostitute is the one that ultimately pays the price. You know who walks away? The trafficker walks away. And you know who else who walks away? The purchaser. They are generally not picked up in those operations. So the person who is the victim is the one that ends up with the legal consequences from that more often than not.
NMDreamCenter.org is the website for the New Mexico Dream Center. Shelley Rep is their executive director, helping to fight domestic minor domestic sex trafficking. That term just so bothers me.
Right.
Minors. I mean, I can almost understand a person that's of age making that decision to
sure.
do that. But you said in the open that there are kids that have been doing this for many, many years. They've been there's familiar trafficking where a child's been trafficked their whole life.
Exactly. The youngest victim we've worked with who's come into services for us is 9 years old. The youngest victims we've consulted on for a human trafficking or sex trafficking case was 3.
How can our listeners help the New Mexico Dream Center in your fight?
Yeah, so a couple of things. So one is we utilize volunteers for many things. We have a drop-in center for unhoused youth because they're very vulnerable to human trafficking. That is almost all volunteer run. So we need volunteers there. We need volunteers for our outreach activities. We have New Mexico's only human trafficking specific shelter. We need volunteers for that. And so we've got a lot of volunteer opportunities. In fact, tonight I'm hosting a volunteer training. But then also financial things, because we do have some funding that comes in from different sources. And when we have like grants and things, that funding is tied to some very specific outcomes that we have to do. But there's a lot of services we provide that go beyond that. So anybody who is contributing or donating to New Mexico Dream Center, like through our website or whatever, that is unrestricted, which means we can use it to meet the needs as they arise. And so that's another way you can help.
We're going to take a quick break. We're with Shelley Rep. She's the executive director of the New Mexico Dream Center. NMDreamCenter.org is their website. Their phone number, if you have an interest in talking with them directly, is 505-900-3833. That's 505-900-3833. Minor domestic sex trafficking in Albuquerque, but this is actually prevalent throughout New Mexico. And Shelley's actually doing a lot with other cities, and I think I even contacted you about an organization similar in Arizona, in
yes.
Tucson, that's trying to do some things, and Shelley's always available to help with that. When we come back, we're going to talk about how large the problem is and whether or not it's too big to actually solve the problem. We'll be back with Shelley Rep right after these messages. Thank you for joining us on ABQ Connect. Jim Williams with you this afternoon. I'm with Shelley Rep. She's the executive director of the New Mexico Dream Center. I did want to also shout out to Berga. Berga Alden is working with you as a community relations manager. She's come on to talk with us. So you might, if you're interested, and I think most of our listeners listen because they intently want to know, how can I get involved with a ministry or
right.
multiple ministries.
Right.
So you can contact Berga or Shelley at 505-900-9833. You can also email at info@nmdreamcenter.org. Again, the website is nmdreamcenter.org. Shelley, is human trafficking in Albuquerque, in New Mexico, too big a problem to address and solve the problem?
So it's a big problem, but I don't think it's too big to address. But I do think that it is going to take a community who's willing to rally around that and provide some solutions. When we look at human trafficking across, specifically domestic minor sex trafficking across the United States, it's real hard to get numbers because this is a crime, and this is a hidden crime. So it's not the easiest thing to always find. Well, when you look at that, it's estimated by the Department of Justice that there are between 100 and 300,000 minors who are in sex trafficking right now. So those are children who are involved across the United States. So it's hard to know exactly how many we have in New Mexico, but it is very population-based, and it is also ties very closely to the types of problems that a community might have. So, for example, in New Mexico, and specifically in Albuquerque, we have an unhoused youth problem. Like, we've got a lot of young people on the streets who are unaccompanied and don't have shelter, and so that makes them prime candidates.
So you're talking about people that are homeless.
Yeah, exactly.
Young people.
And so when we look at some of these things, so we have that problem. We have a lot of families that have just fallen into chaos because of substance use and addictions. And so they're vulnerable. And so when you look at kind of what the makeup of your community is, those are really good predictors of the possibility of young people who end up in trafficking. So when you've got vulnerabilities that aren't addressed and there's not plans around that, those vulnerable people are essentially victims for predatory traffickers.
Shelley, you've worked with most of the people that provide housing and homeless shelters, yeah, et cetera.
Absolutely.
Are there enough services right now if you were homeless, and especially if you're a homeless family, mm-hmm, are there enough services in our community for you to get help if you want it?
So if you want it, there are enough services. I say that kind of tentatively because there are also barriers to trying to get those kinds of services. And so everybody is going to have some sort of limited capacity or, you know, measurement you have to have to be able to get into this. Like, for example, there's a really great ministry in Albuquerque who does amazing things, but they will only work with single moms who have been homeless. So you have to be a homeless mother with at least one child. And so when you look at that, they're limited in what they can provide for that. So we see that there's a plethora of services, but there's a lot of different requirements for those. And what we've seen on the human trafficking side is that there is concern for a human trafficking victim to come into their housing program because traffickers are very rarely picked up and are in jail. And so then this, you know, domestic violence shelter or this program for, you know, homeless women are like, we don't want a trafficking victim because is that trafficker on the street and is he going to find her and then in not only endanger her, but endanger the other people in our program. And so there's kind of some barriers with our human trafficking survivors because of the type of exploitation they've survived.
Minor domestic sex trafficking is our topic today on ABQ Connect. I apologize if you were listening for, I actually think this is encouraging because there's people that are attacking the problem and doing things, and there's ways you as a listener could help, both as volunteer, helping financially. And, you know, I went into dad mode, and you'll talk about your staff in our next segment. But, you know, the two young women you have that go to reach out at night, on Friday nights, if I'm their dad, I'm saying no.
Right.
But they're so brave and they go with the power of the Holy Spirit and they just are meeting with kids and they're handing out food and water and socks and, come on by the harbor and hang out with us and here's some clothes. I mean, there's just amazing things.
Well, and we have seen, honestly, these last couple months an explosion because of those outreach efforts of young people coming into the harbor. And just for clarity's sake, the harbor is a drop-in center that New Mexico Dream Center runs off of East Central. So it's basically Central and Zuni. So anybody who lives in Albuquerque kind of knows that's a sketchy part of town, but we're happy to be there because we want young people to be able to walk up to us. And so we have seen recently where we are just getting young person after young person, you know, coming up to the door, and so much so, in fact, that we kind of had to update our hours and kind of add some additional services because we were having so many young people come. And so, you know, previous to the last couple months, it's been like a dribble of young people coming in, maybe looking at, you know, 30 to 40 a week. And now we're getting like 16 kids a day. And so we're seeing a really big increase in folks coming in.
And there is an expense to that.
There is an expense to that. It is one of our programs that we provide that we don't have a funding stream attached to.
I should rephrase.
Sure.
There is no expense for the people that need services.
No, we do not charge them.
That's right. You're helping everybody. So I misspoke. But you have...
I have to pay bills,
Jim. Have to pay bills. And you have to pay for food. And you have to pay for different things.
Right.
I will tell you that I had a woman call me. This is a couple of years ago. And she was listening to you on the radio. And she called the station. And she said, look, my husband passed away here 2-3 months ago. And this is a guy that collected T-shirts from every walk of life and might have worn each one of them 2 times.
Right.
And when I went to pick them up, they were all perfectly folded, all clean. I mean, he had this collection that had to be 300 t-shirts.
Yeah.
And she allowed me to pick those up and drop those off at the harbor. And man, those were out the window, out the door with people
immediately
needing them. like, and so I was just so, that was just so cool. So there's just different ways people can give. So tell us about all the ways our listeners might be able to help.
Sure. So we do take clothing, but part of the thing to remember about donating clothing is that we work with teenagers and young adults. So don't bring me your vintage 1980s prom dress. I can't use it. So don't do that. We can also always use like new underwear, socks, bras, panties, those kinds of things.
That's got to be new if it's underwear.
Exactly. Anything that's an underclothing item has to be new. So that's something. And that's something you could do at work, Jim. Like you could have like some sort of a drive.
Yeah.
We always need hygiene items and specifically like travel size hygiene. So like shampoo, conditioner, soap, toothbrush, toothpaste, brushes and combs.
Hey, another example of one of our listeners.
Exactly.
She lives in a senior park for elderly people, and she went and said, "Hey, I listened to ABQ Connect. I heard about the New Mexico Dream Center, and they need toiletries."
Yep.
So everybody in this whole thing filled up these giant boxes three or four times for you. And
yeah.
You came and picked them up.
I came and picked them up. Yeah, exactly. And so another thing is, especially because of the weather, is it's hot out there. So we give out about 2 cases of water every single day. And then when we're doing outreach, we're looking at 3 to 4 cases of water for every outreach event. And so water bottles, bottled water is something that we do. We feed those kids a hot meal every day. So if you've got like maybe a Bible study group or something and you guys want to do a meal and bring a meal to us, that's something. We do food drives for teenager food. So like snack kinds of food because we send them away with food. So in looking at these things, you gave 2 really good and relevant examples of how people can walk out their faith and go, here's something that I can do to be the hands and feet of Christ. I can do this. And it's that same kind of thing. So if it's something with your Bible study group and go, you know what, we're going to make a goal and we're going to try to get 500 bottles of water to donate to the New Mexico Dream Center. And let's see if we can do that in 2 weeks or something like that. So when you look at the types of groups and communities you're in and find those kind of opportunities. So that is a very practical way to make the difference in somebody's life immediately.
Shelley, I'm going to ask you about the foster care system in New Mexico. Is that system working to help solve this problem?
So, Jim, actually, we'd say the foster care system contributes to this problem. So here's some things to think about. When you've got a young person in foster care, they're there because of a traumatic experience. And so that tends to mean that they're going to be more vulnerable for any number of things, but one of those things is traffickers. Traffickers know and look for kids who are aging out of that foster care system. So there's that. The other thing is that...
Which is 18.
And the other thing to consider, though, is that when you have a teenager in the foster care system, they do not, they meaning CYFD, have not appropriately trained or recruited foster parents specifically around teens. And so what we see is that those kids go on run. They run away all the time. And so then you've got more young people on the streets who are out there as fodder for these predatory traffickers. And so when we think about this foster system, we know it's there to benefit the children, but because they haven't addressed some of these kind of glaring holes within it, they actually end up contributing to the number of kids who are exploited.
I want to give some perspective to a foster child leaving a foster care situation. For you to take the risk to live on the streets of a town in New Mexico, and you feel more safe doing that than you do in your current foster care situation, says a lot about the foster care system.
Well, it does. And Jim, so my husband Dan and I have done foster care for teens, specifically teen girls who have been exploited because this is my world. And, some of the stories I've heard from my own kids, that have been in my home are amazing. Like, I remember one time, making dinner and the foster child sitting there at the table, and she's like, You know, it is so awesome to have actually a full meal, because at my last foster house, I just had beans and the family got to eat whatever their mom cooked. But we always just had beans, me and then she named off this other foster kid that was with her. So in thinking about this, and she was a runaway, she had come to us because she was on the streets and they couldn't find a foster home that would take her.
Let's give a little more perspective to that, though. If you are a foster child, the family that is in charge of your care is getting paid by the state of New Mexico for your food and your clothes.
Yes. And yet, depending on the motivation for that foster parent, you know, that can be, that's tax-free money, Jim. Like when we were foster parents, we didn't have to pay taxes on any of that. And so you see many foster families who will do this because this is an easier paycheck for them.
Well, I think as we bring these topics up, one of the things I love about you, Shelley, is you're not a complainer. You don't come and rip on the foster care system and this and that. You actually have some suggestions how to make it better.
Yes.
And you're going to be able to share with us in the next segment some of that information. And you're also, 100%. I'm hoping you'll share a story about a transformed life with us.
I do.
Okay. We'll be back with Shelley Rep on ABQ Connect right after this. Our topic today is minor domestic sex trafficking. Again, maybe not a topic for some little ones, but it is such a prevalent problem. And Shelley Rep, the executive director of the New Mexico Dream Center, is in studio. Shelley, we say in our sound messaging at every break that you can call, and you absolutely can. If you want to call us, 505-338-5790. You can ask Shelley direct questions if you'd like to, but you can also call the New Mexico Dream Center at 505-900-3833 or send an email with a question to info@nmdreamcenter.org. Doing amazing things. Love for you to review what's happening on their website. I know you just finished a golf tournament.
Yeah, we did. We just had a golf tournament on Friday, and you know, the thing that makes a golf tournament successful, Jim, is businesses in the community who are willing to sponsor you, because you can never charge enough to be able to actually make what the cost of the golf tournament.
Basically, the greens fees pay for the greens fees.
Exactly. That's exactly what it was. But we had some amazing partners. So one of our partners is Singleton Scriber, which is a law firm here in Albuquerque. And the thing that was so great about them is not only did they help us financially, but they actually are really working on confronting sex trafficking. So they are bringing cases against hotels that are allowing human trafficking to happen in those hotels. And so they have got stuff happening nationwide with that. Also, when survivors are identified because of those legal actions, they set up services with them. And so, like, we'll get calls from their team and say, hey, we've got this sex trafficking victim who's been identified and we need some help with service provision. And so we'll come in and help coordinate that. And then just even at the golf tournament on Friday, one of the gals who's kind of the head of that sex trafficking team for Albuquerque, and her name is Pilar. And so we were talking, she's like, what can I do to help bring some like legal advocacy for your clients? So like maybe they need to ask questions and, you know, there's things on their record that they need help with an expungement or something. So just, you know, even providing some help and taking away a little bit of the fear around working with a legal team and stuff. So they're one of our sponsors who do amazing things for us.
No, I mean, and they're participating in the ministry too.
Exactly.
Hey, you know, I'm just happy that there are people that are providing some backing. And obviously we're asking our listeners, you know, pray about it, think about this ministry, review the ministry, do whatever due diligence you need.
100%.
Shelley, if somebody wants to volunteer, is there a way for them to kind of see what you do?
Yeah. So I definitely recommend that they look at our website, because a couple things. So it has our different programs. So you can go through and kind of see what it is that we actually are doing.
And we're going to give some detail in the last segment today about those programs.
Right. Exactly. And then we also have, so also if you're investigating us, we have a page called Transparency. And it is really important for us to let people know that we walk with integrity. And so on that transparency page, you can see our 990s, which are the taxes that we file as a nonprofit. You can see our policies and procedures. You can look at who our board members are. And so it just gives you a picture of kind of who we are. So it's a good page to look at if you're interested in like donating or you want to get involved in some way. And then we also have a how you can help page. And so that talks about how to get involved as a volunteer. We have four different volunteer categories because we realize people have different things going on in their life. And so they might want to say, hey, my job place, we have a volunteer day every day. Can we come and, you know, provide some sweat equity for you and help with something? So we've got that. We've got what we call backstage volunteers. And so those are people who put together our food bags. We give out, I don't know, like 150 food bags every week, hygiene bags. And so they kind of work behind the scenes, sorting donations and taking care of stuff. We have our frontline volunteers. So those are the volunteers who actually work side by side with our clients. And then we have like specialized skills volunteers. And so those volunteers are people who do have a special skill. So like, let's say thinking about somebody who has a legal background saying, hey, well, we can help with these kinds of issues. Or I've got a tax background. Maybe I can help one of your clients file their taxes. So it's some sort of a special skill that could relate to just helping somebody within our program. And so you could go on there and kind of read through those different job descriptions and see what fits for you and where you are in your life to volunteer.
I think that's amazing. Tell us a story about a person that you've seen their lives transform that has been a trafficking victim.
Sure. So one of our clients who recently graduated from our program she grew up here in Albuquerque in a family where her mother was incarcerated and so was not in the home. And then dad was addicted. And so she had a couple brothers. And so they were moved all the time from place to place because they kept losing housing because all of the money, all the resources from the house were going to feeding dad's addiction. So at 12 years old, she ran away. She's like, I can't do this anymore. So you think about a 12-year-old, she ran away. And the group of kids she hung out with on the street who are also runaways were also between 11 and 13 years old. So you've got a group of very young people unaccompanied on the street. And so when they're on there, they're trying to figure out how they're going to live. So they would do things like, honestly, they would steal food from stores, you know, things like this. And so they were walking through a neighborhood one time and somebody had said, hey, do you guys need some water? It's really hot out here. And so these two girls specifically, an 11-year-old and then who became our client, the 12-year-old, said, yeah, let's go in here. So they went into this apartment and then they got trapped in that apartment. So essentially it was two 20-something dudes who had the apartment, and they said, no, you have to stay here with us now. And by the way, you now have to act like our wives. And so that, if you take what I mean by that, so they cooked, they cleaned, and then they performed the other wifely duties. And they were stuck there for like 6 weeks where they could not leave this apartment because of that kind of situation. And so when they finally escaped, they both ended up going into a youth shelter. So they were contacted, I can't remember exactly, but they ended up going into foster care, and foster care put them in a youth shelter because they couldn't find foster homes for them. The younger one did get in a foster home, and then the gal who became our client did what we call the shelter shuffle, so that you can only stay in a shelter for so long. So they'd put her in one youth shelter, and then they'd move her to another youth shelter. And during this time, she was trying to go to school, but just having a hard time maintaining her grades. And so she ran away again. She's just, I can't do this. And while she was on the street, a trafficker approached her and said, hey, you know, do you need a place to stay? Do you need some food? And just ended up basically bringing her in for the purpose of exploiting her. So then she was trafficked by this guy for another, you know, probably 12 months before she turned herself in to a security guard at a Walmart, where she went up and said, I need help. And so they brought her back into CYFD custody again, and they couldn't find a place for her to go. So she goes back into the shelter shuffle and then was finally able to go into a group home. They were able to put her in a group home and she flourished. We were brought in at that time because she was then screened and was recognized as a human trafficking victim. So we provided support to her at that group home and then kind of walked with her from there. So we were able to help get her into some secondary education. So she became a CNA, which is a certified nursing assistant. And then she decided she wanted to become a nurse. And so at 18, we were able to move her into one of our transitional housing apartment units. And so she came into that and we continued to provide side-by-side services for her. She graduated her nursing program. She now works for Presbyterian Hospital and makes more money than me, and has her own car, has her own apartment. She pays all of her own bills and is just doing well. And so you can see that through relationship, you know, Christ has called us into relationship with him and with other people. And it was honestly through the relationship with her volunteer, like side-by-side advocate, that made the difference. Because this was the lady that took her to church and took her out for coffee and took her out for lunch and encouraged her to keep going. I mean, we provide those services, but we're limited in that. And it was a volunteer who made that kind of difference in her life to where she is now and the amazing nurse that she is for Presbyterian Hospital.
What can our listeners do to help make these transformation stories more common?
I'll tell you what, Jim, we need those volunteers to come side by side. And here's the thing, we've got a high level of training that goes with that. It's not like, we're just going to throw you in there with this human trafficking and go you. There's a lot of training that goes into that so that you know what that looks like and being willing to invest that time in another person. And more often than not, Jim, it's going to be a female. We do have male clients, but most of our clients are girls and women. And so being able to do that's one of the ways that you can make a difference. But here's another way. Jim, you know, during COVID, we almost went out of business because I had all these speaking engagements and fundraisers and COVID hit and right, nothing. You can't do anything.
Yeah.
It all went out. And I remember we were sitting there going, we've got 30 days worth of finances in the bank. We're going to have to give notice for our apartments we're leasing for our clients, our drop-in center for our youth. We've got to give 30-day notice and we're going to be out of business. And what happened was God did an amazing thing and we see God providing. So in the mail that day, there was this big envelope, scary envelope from an attorney's office. And I thought, dang, I'm being sued. It's a good thing I paid for business insurance because I'm going to need it. And it ended up that it was a person who had left New Mexico Dream Center in their will. We didn't even know this person. Like, we didn't know her. I had just spoken at her church and she felt compelled to go in and change her will 2 weeks before she died, which was 4 weeks before the world closed for COVID, which was then 4 weeks before we found that we had this money that kept us alive through COVID. And so when you look and you backtrack that, like God is working 13 miles down the road on behalf of his people. But it takes people responding. And so that's what I would say. It doesn't have to be about New Mexico Dream Center. It has to be about what God's putting on your heart. And if God's leading you to do something, then do it, because you don't know what's going to happen in the next day or the next hour or 3 weeks down the road. But that is how God performs miracle after miracle after miracle, is by his people being willing to step up and go, here I am, God, send me.
Shelley Rep with the New Mexico Dream Center, the executive director. She's in studio with us. If you have questions about the New Mexico Dream Center, call them at 505-900-3833 or reach out via email at info@nmdreamcenter.org. One more segment with Shelley, and we're going to talk about more of their services and give you more of a well-rounded, see what they do every day, trying to help people. And we hope that you'll get involved, and we do appreciate you listening. So we'll be right back. According to our guest today, Shelley Rep, on any given night, Friday night, Saturday night in Albuquerque, you might have as many as 1,000 to 3,000 kids that are victims of domestic minor sex trafficking.
Right. It is. It's crazy to think about. And those kids that are on the street like that are in hotels, that are being purchased in hotels, those are kids that could be unhoused. Those are kids that could have been runaways or kicked out of their homes. Those are kids that were recruited online by traffickers portraying themselves as boyfriends. Like, there's a lot of different methods of getting that kid into that situation.
we're really talking about slavery, aren't we?
We are. In fact, a lot of times people refer to human trafficking as modern day slavery. And when they look at that and you look at what the elements of what went into the slave trade the first time and what elements are keeping people locked in this time, you see a lot of the same coercive elements. We don't see in the United States that kids are like chained necessarily into rooms or bedrooms. I mean, that occasionally happens. We've talked to a lot of young people who are actually kept in dog cages, which is horrific to think about. But the way that they're controlled is really through manipulation and coercion. So we look at it and we say there's three elements that can keep them there. There's force, so physical force to keep them in there. There's fraud, so defrauding them into thinking that, you know, they're going to do a certain job. And then there's coercion, which is that kind of like threat of harm to perhaps somebody else that makes you stay in a situation like, if you don't do this, I'm going to harm your little sister. And so that's kind of an example of coercion. And we see that.
How are children recruited on the internet? I want parents to pay attention to this,
yeah,
because this just doesn't happen to foster care kids and kids, mm-mm, that nobody cares about. It also happens to children that their parents aren't monitoring what they're doing.
Right. So, you know, kids are online and are more internet savvy than I think anybody else. And so what we see is we see traffickers portraying themselves as somebody their age on social media apps or on different kinds of platforms that those kids are using. So if a kid's on Instagram, then they're following them on Instagram and direct messaging and things like that. What the surprising thing is that I think a lot of people didn't realize when they saw all of these kids end up in these human trafficking situations through online recruitment is video game chats. And so if you have a chat function on any video game, no matter how innocuous that video game is, you know, Roblox, if it's got a chat function on it and anybody can access that chat and talk, then basically what they're doing is they're working on developing that relationship with that kid. So we would say they're grooming them to be able to isolate them from their family and those protective factors and move them into a situation where they're under the trafficker's control. So what we've seen over and over again is it starts as a video game chat or whatever kind of conversation on social media, whatever. And then the trafficker moves them to a different chat that seems much more innocuous. So the example we saw that just surprised everybody was that a trafficker was then moving them from the video game chat into a coloring book app. And so they had them download this coloring book app, but this coloring book app had a chat feature. And so when the parents are even going through their phone and they're like, oh, it's a coloring book app, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Anything with a chat feature allows somebody to have contact with your kids, and that trafficker can pretend to be anybody on the other side of the screen. And that's how this trafficker was preying on kids.
Shelley, the New Mexico Dream Center doesn't get involved with law enforcement. In fact, you support law enforcement.
Right.
And there are some people, like we talked about the ghost unit with the Bernalillo County Sheriff's Department.
Right.
That are getting online and faking out traffickers that they're little kids, and
right,
they are getting some prosecutions, but those kids need care when they catch the bad guys, and you're helping with that.
Right, exactly. So we have some programs specifically for providing that care. So we call it aftercare, which means they've been identified as a human trafficking victim, and so we can provide care. So one of the programs we have is called Spoken For. And so Spoken For is our direct services or our case management program. So what that is, those are our employees who work side by side with that survivor to kind of help build back their life. Generally, traffickers will take any sort of identification or vital docs if they have them. And so oftentimes that case manager is helping them get their New Mexico ID, getting their birth certificate. If they're interested in getting back into school, helping them research what schools are appropriate. And so that's what that case manager does, is it kind of helps them find the kinds of resources we have in our community for that person. But we also have some other unique resources. So we have the Eliza Jane House, which is New Mexico's only human trafficking shelter. And so we can take somebody into that shelter, into a space that's safe and protected pretty quickly and easily. And so we can do that. And then we have extended housing, transitional housing. They can come out of the shelter into a housing program. We have the Harbor, which is our drop-in center for unhoused youth, so they can come and be safe. Right now, we're open on Wednesdays and Thursdays from 2 to 8 p.m., and on Fridays, we open at 2, but here's our new thing. We don't close until noon the next day. So we are open all night long from Friday night to Saturday at noon. So we can have those kids in a safe place on a night when we know that there's just a lot of exploitation.
And you do that because technically, if you're going to shelter an underage person, a minor, under 18 years old, New Mexico has all kinds of rules and laws about that. But you can have them in the Harbor, which isn't officially a shelter.
It's not a shelter. It's a drop-in center. So essentially, they can come and they can stay. They can literally play video games all night long. We've got snacks all night long. They might take a nap on the couch or, you know, any of that. We've got like a quiet side and a more lively side with that. But it is a safe place for those kids to be. One of the things we hear all the time is they're afraid to go to sleep when they're on the street because that's when they're most vulnerable. And so things will be stolen. We've had young people woken up in the middle of a sexual assault. And so by having them be able to be in a safe space, we're able to keep them safe. And so this is a pilot program. We're watching really closely to see how that goes. We have outreach, Jim. So we do outreach, as you talked about earlier.
Yeah, talk about that specifically. I mean, you're walking. I'm just telling you, I've been in Albuquerque a long time. So for me to go walk near Catherine in Louisiana,
right,
which is a mile away from your center.
Right. Yeah.
That's a scary place to go walking at 10 o'clock at night.
It is. And yet we have a dedicated team of volunteers who do that, headed up by a couple of our ladies, our staff. And they are looking for those young people who are on the street. They're looking for people who are vulnerable and potentially being exploited. And so they are on Central. They're on Zuni. We have some car teams that drive around to some very specific areas where we know we've seen kids before because we keep really good data. And so they go back and they look for those kids again and try to connect with them and offer resources and information about the Harbor. We do outreach in the strip clubs in Albuquerque. And so we're there because we know even though strip clubs are legal, we know that there's nefarious things that happen within that. And so we're always looking for opportunities to connect with somebody who could be vulnerable.
I get overwhelmed talking to you about this because I just can't believe that it is so prevalent, that there is so much demand for this, that the problem is just getting gigantic. This has got to be making a lot of money for a lot of bad people.
It is. In fact, we do trainings for businesses. So anybody who's interested in a training, you can get it for a community group or a business, and we talk about how this is. So let me tell you just real quickly how much money you can make in a tiny bit of time. So one of our victims put together a math equation for us, and essentially she had to make $500 a day before she could eat or sleep. And so the way that worked out was $50 for a sex act, essentially. So she would have to do that at least 10 times a day. And then for her, just herself to do that, that brought in like $156,000. So then there were four people in that trafficking ring, very small trafficking ring, one trafficker, four girls. So they were bringing in like $625,000 a year untaxed in cash because of the number of people who were willing to purchase for sex, to purchase commercial sex. And so it is very attractive for people who are involved in crime.
I know that we have another legislative session coming up in January.
Yes.
You're already preparing stuff, trying to get laws passed to help you.
Yeah. So we're working again on our human trafficking legislation, which would add some teeth to what we have. And so when we know more, we'll give you the information so that you can get that out to, you know, what the House bill will be. We also support child welfare legislation because we need that help as well.
Obviously, we can't cover everything on ABQ Connect. We only have an hour. Shelley, I'm always so grateful. People can go to nmdreamcenter.org or call you at 505-900-3833. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jim.